Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back. Hope you had a great weekend. This is episode 240 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I'm Sean Penner, your host. So happy you are here today. I want to say congratulations to everyone who went to the Grand Prix over the weekend. We had two, one in Providence and one in Shizuoka. And wow, that was really cool. I love watching team events. It was really cool to see the Peach Garden Oath do so well. They got second place in Providence. And a huge shout out to Corey Burkhart, who with his team made first place in GP Providence. So that was really cool. I love Corey. I think he's a great guy. Past guest to the show, and it's so cool to see him and his teammates do so well. So congrats. What a fun weekend. Hope you got out there and played some Magic as well. And here we are, the beginning of a new month, so I will be announcing the winner of the patron exclusive giveaway here shortly, probably in the next episode or two, so stay tuned for that. Of course, each and every month, as a thank you to the patrons, we give away some Magic related product. When I say we, I mean MTG Pro Tutor and Paragon City Games. So Paragon City Games, thank you so much for supporting the show, for being a proud sponsor, and for providing the product that we give away to the patrons and to the winner of our leagues. So if you're interested in becoming a patron, go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon, where you can learn more about that. And as I said, each and every month as a thank you, we always give away some Magic-related product to a lucky patron. So stay tuned for that. And I briefly mentioned the leagues that we do right now. We are doing signups for the Ixalan Sealed League that we're doing with Just the Prodigies. Signups close on the 4th, all right? So that's tomorrow if you're listening to this episode the day it goes live, okay? Come to the Facebook group, the Prodigy Facebook group. We have an event there. I mentioned the leagues that we run, and right now we are about to close the signups for the Ixalan Sealed League that we do with Just the Prodigy. So go to mtgprotutor.com/sealed league. That's /sealed league if you haven't yet, and sign up for the league. Signups close on the 4th. That is tomorrow if you are listening to this episode the day it comes out. October 4th is the last day that you can submit your payments and sign up for the league. So come and join us. It's great. We've had a bunch of people sign up already. We're going to be building out the brackets and getting everybody's cards here in the next couple days. So go to mtgpro2.com/sealed league. Join the event and then send your payment via PayPal and we will get you in the bracket for sure. So what's really cool is not only is the league much cheaper to join than your normal Magic Online League, but we also have some really cool prizes. First place will get a bundle of whatever set we're doing the league in. So in this case, it will be an Ixalan bundle provided by Paragon City Games. And then 2nd through 8th, their prizes are tied to the entry fee for the next league. So for example, 2nd place will get entry fee and a half. 3rd and 4th place will get their entry fee. And 5th through 8th place will get half the entry fee for the next league. And we have details on how to redeem that all in the group. So just know that there are prizes for the top 8, including actual real physical Magic cards for whoever takes down the event. And it's a great opportunity to play with other prodigies who love Magic and are easygoing and are happy to help you learn and grow. So come join the league. Check it out. Again, you have until end of the day on October 4th to grab a spot in the league. Well, thank you again for joining me today. Can't wait to have our guest talk about his journey and experience through Magic. So without further ado, let's sit down and do that. What's up, everybody? I'm really excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest has 3 Grand Prix top 8s, the most recent being the Standard GP Turin in 2017. Coming to us from Munsterstadt, Germany, which is close to Mannheim, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Christian Hauk. Christian, how are you doing today?
Doing great. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yeah, sure. Let's go.
Excellent. So, prodigy out there, Christian is not on Twitter, so you can't tweet at him there, but he is on Facebook. And so, you know, that's kind of where he has his Magic presence. But Christian, we would love to hear about you and your origin story with Magic and learn how you got into the game. So can you take us back in time and tell us about the first time that you ever saw or played with Magic cards?
Oh, yeah, sure. I have to go way back in time for that. But I think it was at school. I was always into gaming, and I saw these kids in school playing with cards and in the school bus, at school generally. And I found it pretty exciting. And actually, the first card game I played wasn't Magic. It was around back then, but it was called Doom Trooper. Doom Trooper.
Okay.
Nobody knows this game.
No.
The pictures are just way more flashy, and I don't know. I just played Doom Trooper, and didn't take much time where I realized, okay, this game isn't as good as it should be, and you can break it, and I do crazy stuff, and it wasn't that much fun. So I switched to this other card game, which was Magic the Gathering, and yeah, I never looked back since then.
Awesome. Yeah, didn't you ever heard of it? And, you know, I just pulled it up real quick, and yeah, just looking at, you know, it looks like some kind of sci-fi themed type game, and, you know, a card game. That's so fun. It's so interesting how, you know, our paths to Magic sometimes come through other card games and whatnot, and that's really neat. I know that when I was young, my brother and I played every card game that we could find, like Doom and Babylon 5 and Star Wars and Battletech and all these crazy stuff. And, you know, obviously Magic was in there too. So it's so fun to kind of just look back and realize, oh man, all these games that aren't around anymore and Magic is still here. You know, I love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it.
Exactly.
So what's been your, what was your first set that you came in on?
First set, actually, the German limited edition. This is a set where you can still crack dual lands, black border.
Okay.
And I actually bought some packs. I still own these sealed products today. It's pretty ridiculous, but yeah, this was the first set, the German foreign black bordered edition.
Wow, German limited edition. That's neat. What sets did that have cards from? Like, was it its own set, or was it just like a reprint of Revised or something? Or like, what was it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was a reprint of Revised, but it's black bordered.
Wow, right? That's really cool. And you still have it? You still have some sealed?
Yeah, I have a sealed display, which is like a lot of money worth today. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't have like old product like that. What do you do with that? Do you just keep it and say, oh, I have a sealed product? Or are you ever actually going to open it? Are you ever actually going to sell it? Like, what are you going to do with old sealed product, you know?
Normally, I just crack the packs.
There you go.
I try to crack the packs. But this is something special to me. And yeah. I don't know. I just keep it and look at those.
That's cool.
Old, like, cards.
Part of your collection.
Yeah, of course. Fun. I just love old cards.
So you came in, you know, way back then, which is really neat. And have you been playing solid ever since, or you've been in and out off and on?
No, I didn't. I mean, the first time I played like more competitively or dipped into the tournament scene was with Champions of Kamigawa, I guess. And I didn't play solid back then, but this was the first time I really tried to improve my game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I had some ups and downs, a lot of ups and downs.
Oh man, I can't wait to talk more about those. That'll be a lot of fun. What's been your favorite set?
My favorite set. So I have to go actually with the very first set, so Alpha Beta.
Yeah.
This is by far my favorite set. I mean, all these old cards, these iconic cards, I just love them and look at them. I don't know. I also collect the older ones. And I don't know if I'm holding these Sarah Angels, Sheevan Dragons in my hand from the very first set, it feels like I have some magic history in my head, you know?
So true. So along the same lines, what is one of your favorite cards?
My favorite card. All right. I have to go with Knight of the Reliquary.
Oh, excellent. So for those of us who don't know, what is it? What does it do? And then why do you like it?
Well, Knight of the Reliquary is the creature for one colorless, one white, and one green. It's a 2/2, and it says get +1/+1 for each land in your graveyard. And you can tap the knight and sack a plain or forest to search your library for land and put it into onto the battlefield. And why do I like it? Well, you know, I always say to my friends, if you untap with Knight of the Reliquary, this game is basically over. Because the options you have when you have a deck built around it are basically endless. You can do so many things with it. Search whatever you want. You can do whatever you want, basically.
Excellent. Yeah, I love, you know, interactions like that, being able to do, you know, sneaky things, and that's so fun. That's really cool. Cool.
Yeah. Today, persons are already know in combat. I mean, you can block with a knight and search for a second land, search for a fetch land, and grow it two times, you know?
Yes.
But you can do so much more, indeed, where people are not used to it. You can kind of trap your opponents. Still today, I recently fetched, like, for a wasteland and wasted one of my own lands to grow it three times, you know?
Yeah.
Counting, flashing in the script ranger and then tapping the knight and do it all over again and stuff like that. I mean, so still today, it's kind of a surprise package.
That's so fun because just the other day, somebody mentioned that interaction to me too. And I was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. You know, you can, I think they had Ghost Court or whatever, but same thing, you know, they Ghost Court their own land and then go get something. And,
oh, sweet.
You know, so then they get that in the graveyard. And then, like you said, you can get a fetch land and then, you know, slam that away too. So you can block and then represent just so much more damage. So that's so fun. Yeah. Man, I love, you know, hearing about stuff like that and learning about you and your Magic history and how you came in and whatnot. And so I'd like to find out, when you started getting serious about Magic, you know, playing it more, what was an early challenge that you struggled with and how did you overcome it?
Well, basically, this was my very first Grand Prix ever. This is a funny story. It was a Friday evening, and I was playing at the kitchen table with a friend of mine, you know. And this was the first time I dipped into a limited. It was Champions of Kamigawa block, or just Champions of Kamigawa. Just Champions, yeah. And there was this GP coming up. It was the next day in Paris. So we were playing, and my friend said, hey, why not go to this GP and drive there overnight? And I was like, sounds crazy, but okay, let's do it. So we drove through Paris through the night. Searched for a hotel, slept like 2 hours, and played the GP the next day. It was my very first GP, and I was super excited and hyped, and all I wanted to do was make day two. So this was my big goal, you know?
Yes.
So after every round, I pushed myself, and yeah, you can do it, so focus. And I ended up playing 7-2 at my first Grand Prix, which was amazing for me. But back then, this so nowadays this is good enough to play at the second day of competition. But back then, you needed to top 64, I guess, in the final standings that they want to make it to the second day. And yeah, guess where I finished at that GP with my 7-2 record. Yeah, it was just one place short of the bubble. So the tournament was basically over. And I was pretty devastated at that point because it was my very first GP and I was so excited. And I was so proud of myself when I won my last round, and then it wasn't enough.
Oh, man. Yeah, that would be a challenge, you know, facing that early on. So what did you do? What did you learn? How did you move past that? What can you share with us?
Well, there were several more moments where I kept losing and had big losing streaks along the way. And, you know, I never gave up and focused on my game and tried to improve my game. And there's always times when you keep losing and just nothing worked out the way planned. But it will get better if you keep improving your game, I can tell you. There will come tournaments where you spike if you keep trying. Just keep trying, never give up, and always try to improve your game.
Okay. Yeah, so especially, you know, when you give it all you have, you got to remember that there are going to be, you know, ups and downs and variances, and you just have to stick with it. As long as you're doing your part to, you know, stay up on your skills, that the results will come eventually. So, yeah. Good stuff.
You have to accept the variance.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think about that at first, but I was kind of devastated after losses or losing streaks, or if I lose an important match or matches where I felt favored and I fell short. But I mean, there's variance in this game, and you have to accept that. Once you accept it, that's just the case, you can live with those losing streaks way, way better.
Yeah, so true. So Oh man. So your journey has been, you know, full of ups and downs, and you just mentioned a low point for you. Was that your worst Magic moment, or was there another experience that, because that was like an early challenge, but as you improved and went on, would you say that was the lowest that you've been, or?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the worst. I don't know. There were a lot of bad moments, but I don't know. I mean, I was always the grinder guy, you know, who qualifies for the Pro Tour, then fell short, qualify again, fell short, qualify again, and so on. So even though I had the results to always grind back to the Tour, I never really made it when it counts, you know? It just felt these 1-2 more wins at the Tour, which could get me to the next stage, to the big stage, to Bros. I never could get there. This was pretty hard for me. But I keep trying, and you know, someday perhaps this season it might be my season. So.
Yeah. So, what would you say has been your proudest Magic moment?
Oh, my proudest Magic moment. I guess you heard before, but this should be my very first top 8 at a big tournament. It was German nationals back then, and I was testing with a friend of mine, and I made the top 8 there, even the top 4 to qualify for Worlds and the German team, and all my friends were watching and cheering for me. So this was my first big top 8 at a big tournament, and definitely one of the proudest moment.
Wow. So what did that mean for you? What did that feel like?
Oh, it felt just amazing. I didn't expect that at all. And I don't know if your work pays off and you finally get the piece of the cake. It's just amazing.
Are you in the running for German Nationals this year?
Yeah, I was playing in the Nationals. Didn't went the way I wanted to, but I mean, that's okay.
There's always, it's cool that they brought that back, so it's going to give players more opportunities in the future to continue to play, to be able to represent their country.
It's so great. I think Nationals is one of, if not the greatest tournaments you could play in if you're playing Magic. It's just so cool. It's combined draft and constructed, which I really, really like. It's a 2-day event. All the people you know, the whole community, the whole German community comes together, and it's such a fun tournament. And I don't know. I always loved Nationals back then, and I was so happy when they announced they bring it back. Mm-hmm. So it's way better than the qualifiers back there. They just felt like PTQs, you know?
Got it.
It wasn't Nationals at all, but now I think it's great for the Magic community to bring back Nationals.
Yeah, it's going to be so fun. And like you said, it's just neat to have the whole community come together and cheer for the country and just watch the players do well. And every year whenever I bring on players from, you know, the World Magic Cup, they always say that it's a great event and they love it. And being with your team and your countrymen is just so powerful. And so, yeah, I definitely applaud that. You know, Wizards has done that, and I definitely look forward to, you know, more national events. That's so cool. So you went from your proudest Magic moment was your first big, you know, finish, and now here we are in 2017. You just made top 8 of another Grand Prix, and that's really neat. And so we'd love to dive into that and learn about how you prepare for events, how do you pick your deck, and how much do you play. So can you tell us what you did, all the details leading up to GP Turin?
Played a lot of Magic online. That's kind of the easiest way to prepare for a tournament, in my opinion. I picked different decks and read all the articles to kind of form a meta game for Turin. So I don't know, Fred Nelson and Brian Brodeur and Corey Baumeister, you know, made the top 8 with the same team on list. A week ago, so I knew that's the same thing I experienced while playing Magic Online. And Teemo Energy is very, very a very, very good deck in the meta right now. And I knew, okay, this might be the correct choice, but you know, on Magic Online, the meta game evolves way faster than in real life. Yeah. So the last week, two GP Turin, I was playing Teemo, and I got crushed by all these white-green ramp decks and other decks who were built to crush Teemo, like blue-black control with Scarab God and stuff like that. And I was thinking, okay, maybe this isn't the best choice for the GP right now. But, you know, in paper, the people don't react that fast to the metagame than Magic Online. So I said to myself, all right, I will give this another shot. And it kind of worked out. The metagame wasn't the metagame I experienced playing online.
So what makes... So you said it was Teemo Energy, right?
Yeah.
And
with a special flag.
Yes. And so you said that it's doing really good in the meta, right now, or at least then. Why is that? What were you looking at? What were some of the considerations? Like, how did you come to that conclusion?
Well, I played like 10 mirror matches. Yeah, I guess it was in 15 rounds I played 10 mirror matches.
Wow.
Which is pretty ridiculous. And I won 9 of those, I guess.
Whoa.
I didn't face some of the newer decks at all. I never faced ramp. I faced control one time, which I lost. And I lost another time in the top 8 against blue deck control. But the meta was pretty good for the Teemo list, at least in at day one of the competition, for sure. So I always try to kind of predict the metagame for a tournament by looking up recent results of tournaments or Magic Online deck lists, which went 5-0, and read some articles and just think about what would people play the next week and what decks will be represented most, and try to pick a deck which fits the meta pretty good.
That's a really good process. So, you started out by saying, three really good players just made, top 8 of a Grand Prix the week before, or not too long ago, using this deck. So there's something there. And then you took it and started practicing with it. And you said you played a bunch of practice games and won, 9 out of 10. That's really good. But you also kept your finger on the pulse, like which decks went 5-0, what else is going well, and start thinking, okay, how would people, shift to adjust to any changes, and then how do I shift to adjust to that, and so I love that you're thinking one step ahead and keeping on top of what other people are doing to really smooth out your tournament prep process. So that's really neat. What would you say is for you the most effective way to prepare? Like what was a single thing that gave the most impact to your results?
The most impact, basically picking a deck which you're familiar with. Don't make just last minute changes to a deck you never played before. Try to know the ins and outs of your deck, and also know how the other decks work. If you know the matchups pretty well, so always just sometimes picking just a deck you're surely not gonna play. Just play it to know the deck and know how it works and how this deck will react to the deck you're gonna to pick, and just know all the interactions and really makes you feel more comfortable.
Yeah, that's so true. Playing a deck you're familiar with makes a huge difference. Yeah, I've been on both sides of that, and I can definitely see the difference in my game for sure. So as you've played Magic all over the world against people from everywhere, what's the biggest mistake that you see players make?
You mean beginners or advanced? I don't know.
Just
in general?
Yeah. From your observation, what are something that stands out to you that players can do better?
Number one has to be keeping too much hands.
Ooh, okay.
So I can tell you my win percentage went up a lot when I was mulligan more hands. So I think people are willing to keep a mediocre 7-card land, which has a fine mixture of spells and lands. But that's not always how it works, you know. You need to have a game plan too. So and what do this hand do the next few turns? What I want to do in this matchup? How do I win the game? And I can tell you, you will see you will win a lot more games with a good 6-card hand than a mediocre 7-card hand.
Yeah.
Especially when you're able to scry nowadays. So this has to be number one, I guess.
Yeah. So people don't mulligan enough. You know, they keep too many okay 7-card hands when they could toss it for a great 6-card hand, you know? So that's really true. And I what you said about having a plan, you know, they see, okay, hey, I got my spells and I got a good mix of mana. But how does that line up with what your opponent's doing, you know, especially in game two, after you've already seen some stuff, you got to really think, hey, are these seven cards going to get me there? Or would I be better off with a 6, you know? So that's really cool. That's really cool.
Absolutely.
So what have you learned from Magic, Christian, that you've been able to apply to, you know, other non-Magic parts of your life?
Well, I think from Magic, always make the best out of a given situation, I would say, and make the best out of the resources you have. Hmm. Like, you know, Magic players are always oriented to get the best value out of something or maximize something. And I mean, you can relate this to the real life in various situations. I mean, you have to give something given and you have to make the best of it. And I think magic helps with that. You can find the best solution way easier.
I love that. Make the best of any situation you're given, you're faced with. Like, I think that's so true because, you know, like you say, in Magic, you have a plan and then your opponent does something and, oh, now the plan's all gone, you know, and you have to make the best of that situation, figure out exactly how to navigate through that. Think about, you know, like you said, calculate your outs and what the chances are of you drawing this and that. And that goes right into life, just like you said, you know, like life throws curveballs and you're faced with so many situations and you just have to make the best of it. Use the resources available to you. Think of how you can use those resources or what resources you need to move through it. And I just love the parallels between, you know, Magic and, you know, life. Some are really, you know, obvious and overt and others are more, you know, subtle. And it's really neat just when we peel back those layers and realize, hey, there's a lot going on in this game and what it can do for us as people. So I think it's awesome. What are your thoughts on, you know, yeah, what are your thoughts on taking things from games and applying them to other areas? Is that, you know, something that you do actively or just kind of, you know, passively happens throughout?
I think it's passively happens. I think it's not something I take actively. No, I don't. No. It's just something which that's pretty good way to describe it.
Yeah, cool.
It just passively happens. Yeah.
So back to tournament prep and whatnot, how, you know, so you play Magic online and then obviously when you go off to a paper tournament, you need cards. What do you just have a large collection? Do you, you know, buy boxes of every set that comes out? Do you just go off and get the singles? Like, how do you actually build the collection for the decks that you need? Because a lot of players are faced with, oh, I want to go to a tournament and play this deck, but, oh, I don't have the cards. So how do you face that challenge?
Yeah, luckily I have a great community here with a lot of people who are willing to lend me the cards I need. Or, I mean, I can buy them online too. Sometimes I buy the missing cards online. I don't have that big of a collection. I mean, I own a lot of standard cards from recent tournaments or some modern stuff, but and my older cards, of course, but I can't play really Magic with them because they're, I don't know, Shivan Dragons, Sarah Angels, or Sangyo Empires. But, I mean, it's a great community here. And,
yeah.
They will lend me the cards I need. It's so I don't have trouble with finding my missing cards.
Right. And I think that's so, you know, key to be a part of your local community and and, you know, foster that relationship among your friends and, you know, do that for others, right? Like if you're willing to lend your cards to other people, then when you go out to an event and you don't have all that you need, then your friends and your community is there to support you. And many Magic players, like there's like a ton of them, they're so nice and willing to do that, especially if they're not going to the event, they're willing to let you borrow it. If you've proven that you are someone who, you know, returns stuff in good condition and stuff like that, then, you know, they'll let you do that because, you know, deep down we all want to enjoy the game and help others do the same. And so it's like, hey, if I'm not going, then sure, here, you can borrow these as long as I get them back when you return. And I think that's a really cool thing that you tapped into there, is the community and what, you know, how we support each other and what we do. So that's awesome.
It's one thing I really love about Magic in general. It's the community. It's just so great and nice. I mean, you won't find this anywhere near, I guess.
Yeah.
The Magic community is just very unique.
I agree. So do you have a process for identifying your weaknesses, your shortcomings in Magic, and then, you know, how to get better at them? So how does that look like for you? What do you do to get better?
Well, I make mistakes like everyone else, and I just try to identify these mistakes, you know? If I know, all right, this is something I could do better, I could have done better, and just reflect your games and identify your mistakes, and then you can work on those. I mean, just, I don't know, sequencing spells different in this matchup, or taking in draft this card or card over another card, or prioritize other cards higher, you know. Just identify your mistakes, and then you can work on it, and listen to other players. Mm. I mean, this is just one thing I had to learn. But it definitely improved my game. Just don't be too proud to say, all right, I do nothing wrong here. I made the best play. I did everything I could. There was nothing wrong with my play. I couldn't prevent the loss. Just try to find mistakes. This would improve your game.
Yeah. And you just said, you know, learn to listen to others, and you know, I think that's a really important lesson to learn. It sounds like something happened to help you realize that. Is there an event or a story that you could share that helped you realize that, you know, listening to others can help you improve your game?
Well, I can't tell you one specific tournament or situation. I just had to learn this through the years, because I never wanted to I don't know. I just find everything out on my own.
Yeah.
And I thought I knew best, but I really didn't. So I had to learn this the hard way.
Yeah.
By losing a lot.
Got it. Yeah, I think that's a really good point that you made, you know, to identify your weaknesses. Obviously, you need to be, you know, an active part of the process and reviewing your own games and saying, oh, what could I have done? But then also asking others, you know, especially those who may watch you play, or that you play with all the time, and that you recognize as, you know, better than you, and or even those who you don't recognize as better than you. Like, there's good ideas that come from everywhere. You know, you don't have to accept everything, but do open up your ears and listen and consider everything. Maybe try it out, see if it works for you, and then if not, be like, okay, that didn't really work, you know, and then kind of. But yeah, I think that's really neat to tap into the observations that others have about you and your game. So yeah, that's cool. Hey Christian, what's your best format?
My best format, I would say Steel Deck, yeah.
Steel. Oh, excellent. So when this comes up, you know, Ixalan will still be pretty new. So what do you do with a Steel Deck? You know, like, how you get a pool, and what do you do to make the most of it? What are you looking for? And walk us through that, because, you know, pre-release is not too long ago as of, you know, when this goes live, and there might be, I know that here in the Pro Tutor Prodigy group, we have a sealed league that we run regularly. And so tell us a little bit about your sealed process and how that looks.
Well, all right. Just sealed deck. I mean, the first thing you do is look at your res, you know. But the funny thing in sealed deck is you don't get the bomb res every time. Sometimes you have to play with no res or no playable res at all.
Yeah.
But I think in every sealed pool, you can build a deck which is capable of winning. So just look at the rares. If they're good and they're fitting, play them. But if not, try to find something different which can still win games even against decks with big flashy rares. So I like to go like under them, like perhaps build some aggro deck when your pool is pretty weak, or just find a way to just play a solid deck. It doesn't has to be this enormous, or just try to build a deck which has a winning game plan. That's pretty important. And a solid curve, solid mana base, and the game plan as a way to win the game.
What are some, obviously every set card, you know, brings its own set of challenges, but when you say, you know, come up with a game plan, it sounds like that's pretty important. How? Like you look at the bombs that you are going to play and work around those, or do you look for, you know, build around, or if you have a build around uncommon, maybe build around that. Like, you know, totally agree it's important to have a game plan. What do you do to develop the game plans for your sealed decks?
I have a good mixture of removal and creatures. I like to play,
okay,
I don't know, so 13 to 17 creatures, so like two removal to, I don't know, as many as you can have
in
the given colors. And just look at your curve and look at your evasion cards, like flyers or creatures which can be unblockable, I don't know. Just something to sneak through damage when the board stalls. A lot of sealed decks I witnessed couldn't overcome a board stall at all. And in sealed deck, you know, there are a lot of situations where the board stalls. It depends which set you play. I don't know what Ixalan will look like.
Right, yeah, it's going to be exciting.
But there are big dinosaurs and high toughness creatures, so it might be a set where board stalls are actually happening. So you need ways to break those. It's really important. Like, I don't know, just the card, the overrun card, overcome. It's not that good of a card. People don't like to play it, but I mean, if you didn't open a good pool and have those great rares who won the game on their own, maybe just a one-off overcome could sneak you in the wins you need. So just look for such cards which can turn the game around.
Excellent. Yeah, that's so true. And I love that challenge. You know, it's like a puzzle. You know, you get this pool of cards and all the cards are all the pieces, and there's you know, put the pieces together in the right way to get optimal results. And it's really fun. I think it's really cool. So awesome. So thanks for sharing your sealed advice. It's really fun to hear what our guest's best format is and then, you know, advice within that format. And especially right now with Ixalan being, you know, so new that, you know, I think limited advice is very relevant because the activity in limited is, you know, usually higher when sets first come out. So it's going to be exciting to, you know, play that and see that. And I'm also interested to see how it impacts, you know, standard, because there's going to be a huge, you know, change, a huge rotation of the standard pool. So what do you think, what are your thoughts on that? Obviously you still need to play standard for competitive events and whatnot. And we're about to get this big shakeup. So where do you think it's going to go? And have you taken much thought as to the impact of what's going to happen?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thought I had when I read the spoiler was, right, there are not too many cards who will impact the standard metagame at the moment. I might be wrong, but I think the Teemo Energy deck and the Mono Red deck don't lose a lot of cards. These decks will still be tier 1, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Teemo Energy doesn't lose anything at all. I mean, like Lumbering Falls or Elder Deep Fiend, if you play it, that's basically it. I mean, the deck will be there just as a Kaladesh block constructor deck, I think.
Wow.
And the Mono Red deck is like it's losing one burn spell, which will be replaced by Lightning Strike,
mm-hmm.
and a bunch of one drops. I don't know. You could replace them by playing like more Soulgar mages or the new one mana guy like Rigging Runner. I don't know if it's good enough. The 1/1 first strike, which gets a counter if you attack or something like that. So mono red will still be tier one as well, I would say. And then after that, there will be some flashy new decks with Ixalan cards.
Yeah. Everyone's going to try the tribal. Everyone's going to try dinosaur tribal. Everyone's going to try, you know, vampire tribal. So we'll see.
There will be something for sure. Yeah. But I didn't figure it out yet. So yeah. I'm excited.
Me too. So when you are keeping up on what's going on and kind of doing this research, where do you turn to? What are some resources that you can point us to?
Well, I basically don't read that much. I, of course, I read like articles, General Fireball, Star City Games, and MTG Goldfish to look up deck lists or winning deck lists to try to figure out some kind of a meta. But yeah, that's basically all I read up.
Yeah, MTG Goldfish, and those are really good, and obviously they have a lot of great information for players who want to, you know, like you said, read articles and review which decks are doing well and those tournament reports, and yeah, really good resources there. So, do you have any other routines or habits or things that you do, you know, regularly that you feel contributes to your success as a Magic player?
That's a very interesting question. I always to figure out some strategies or puzzles, such, I don't know, just figure out something, and I with the numbers and stuff like that, and I don't know, it's just fun for me to have like a challenge and figure out how it works in basically every game or I don't know. It's hard to describe.
So as of right now, how many pro points do you have?
Right now, I mean, the season is pretty fresh, and I have 6 pro points at the moment. So I'm currently pro point leader in Germany, which is pretty funny. And I have 2 consecutive pro tours coming up where I'm qualified. So looking pretty good.
So you have 6 right now and 2 pro tours, right? So that's going to be at least another 6. You get 3 for each one.
Yeah.
That's neat.
I mean, I'm looking forward to get more than 6 out of these 2.
Of course, of course. But like you said, maybe this is your season. So what events do you have coming up? Where are you going to be? What are your plans for getting more pro points? Tell us.
So, obviously the next pro tour, which is pro tour Ixalan, which is funny because I won an RPTQ for Hour of Devastation, and I couldn't go there because I had a wedding to attend of my friend, and I was his best man, so I really couldn't go there. Even though I love Japan, I love the people, I love the food, I would love to go to Japan again, but I really couldn't. So I could transfer my invitation to go to Ixalan.
Excellent.
And then, I made top 8 in Turin, which qualifies me for Rivals of Ixalan. So it worked out pretty good. So I have these 2 pro tours coming up. Then I will be playing Grand Prix Warsaw.
Okay.
Just a week after Ixalan. And I will play Grand Prix Lyon. It's team sealed with
Excellent.
My brother and a good friend of mine. And apart from that, I don't know for sure. But these are events I'm for sure going to attend.
Excellent. Oh, man. It's so fun, especially the team events that you have coming up. Like, that's going to be, you know, a lot of fun. Everyone, you know, like we talked about, really love the team events. So I'm glad they're doing more of those. So really cool. So what advice would you give to newer Magic players? You know, because a lot of people come into the game and they start loving it and they want to dive in deeper. And, you know, they realize, oh, man, like, yeah, you can go, you know, really deep down this rabbit hole and it can be overwhelming. So what advice would you give to new Magic players?
Yeah, just don't take the game too, don't be too hard on yourself and take it easy and just practice and try really to improve. Don't take everything for granted, except that someone is better and you can learn from it. And keep improving and don't step back when everything goes wrong. So I can tell you, if you keep trying and keep improving, you will be on the winning side at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's good. Good advice for new and old players alike. And as we wrap it up, what is one last parting piece of guidance for us? Either something you already said that you emphasized, Christian, or something new you want to leave with us here at the end?
No, I would say really the most important thing is to keep trying and never give up, even though you're losing. Just keep trying and you will get there, I will promise.
Love it. Christian, thank you so much. I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse, and thank you for your time, for sharing your stories and your experiences with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Christian, thank you again for coming on to the show. Prodigies, episode 240 is in the bag. You can get the show notes at mtgpro2.com/Christian Hauk. And a few housekeeping things before we wrap up. Join the league. We have the signups for the Ixalan Sealed League closing on October 4th. So if you're hearing this episode on time, then head on over to mtgpro2.com/Sealed League, where you can sign up for that. A huge thank you to the patrons who keep the show going, as well as a huge thank you to Paragon City Games for sponsoring the show and providing the prize support, not only for the patrons, but for the Seal League as well. And finally, another congratulations to the top teams of GP Providence and GP Shizuoka, especially past guest Corey Burkhart, who took down GP Providence with his team. So congrats, man. That's awesome. Well, Prodigies, thank you so much for joining me today. Absolutely love doing this. Can't wait to connect with you again real soon. And until then, I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.